America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day as the headlines pile up about worried Democrats, desperate Democrats, confused Democrats, gloomy Democrats. The indications are so overwhelming about Republican success coming up in the off-year elections less than a year from now that I think there's a tremendous danger of overconfidence. It's important for people to get a history lesson. No election is easy, particularly no election in a country as badly divided as the United States is now, where the political future for both parties is uncertain. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't accept the idea that if the election were held right now, today, in this frustrating time for our country, that there would be a disaster for Democrats. There probably will be a disaster for Democrats in the election of 2022. However, there is no such thing as a sure thing, and I am beginning to sense and to worry about. And, you know, it's my job to worry, because if you're looking at the future, you can never be sure. And the worry here is a sense of overconfidence where Republicans believe the only thing they need to do is hang back, don't talk about changing anything, just talk about how lousy things are, how incompetent the Biden administration looks, and it does, how terribly the Democrats have done, how different many different scandals they have, and how they're concentrating on stuff that isn't popular, and basically to just let them destroy themselves. It's a basic political adage. If your opponent is in the process of hurting himself or herself, get out of the way. But in this situation, where the idea that the country is headed in the wrong direction is so overwhelming, you have to offer more than just stop. There has to be a new direction, a right turn, if you will. We're going to talk about one of those right turns on the issue of education. There's a potential ballot initiative in California that would concentrate on what the Virginia results showed are the greatest weakness for Democrats, particularly among those crucial swing voters in the suburbs that everybody's heard so much about. And David Welch is a Silicon Valley, I don't know if he's a millionaire or a billionaire, but he's got bucks. And he's using those bucks to try to rescue the children of his state from a disgraceful, failing education system. We spoke yesterday about something that Andy Kessler had pointed out, is that if you talk about disparate impact and systemic racism and things that Democrats love to talk about, look at the education system in California. Do you know how many education, according to statewide testing, which they do to try to say where they need more money, where they need more resources, where they need a different approach? Honestly, they need it all over the state. You're talking about a disaster. Among black students in California, what percentage read at grade level or above? At grade level or above in the eighth grade? And by eighth grade, you gotta know how to read. Basically, it's for black students, it's 10%. For Latino students, it's 17%. Overwhelming majorities of students of color in the California school system, and it's an overwhelming majority of students who are students of color, don't know how to read as to grade level. And it doesn't matter how many different programs you're going to do in the federal government for job retraining or for remedial education. If you haven't helped kids grab hold of reading, which is an access to the world, which is an access to an American life, if you haven't been able to do that by the eighth grade, for goodness sake, your education system is in trouble. So what about a constitutional guarantee for a decent education? It's a radical idea. It's the kind of idea that could give focus and meaning to this election beyond just beating the libs. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. We're going to be speaking with David Welch, who has initiated this initiative, which I think is a great idea and exactly what the Republican Party needs, and we will be talking about it. The basic question here is, what is going to be the theme that is going to give Republicans some kind of focus? If you look back on this, it can't just be let Biden destroy himself, because this is something that William Galston has written about in the Wall Street Journal. And he's entirely correct. He describes the situation of a president who was elected with the idea of bringing America back from all kinds of dysfunctions and embarrassments and divisions. And in his first year, he actually had some legislative successes, just as Biden has had some legislative successes. Yes, the infrastructure bill counts as a legislative success, but nobody cared. And it's a president who came in with high hopes, and people were relieved for the end of the Carter administration. But then President Reagan, at the end of his first year, at this time his first year, his polling numbers were similar to Biden's. And he lost big time in the House of Representatives. It didn't give the Democrats control of the House of Representatives in 1981. 1982 was the midterm election, because they already had control of the House of Representatives. They never lost it. They had lost in a surprise the Senate control. And this is one of the reasons that Reagan, after the midterm elections, there was an assumption, because the economy was still lagging, people's sense of where the country was going was still lagging. Reagan had a big wave of sympathy after he was shot in the chest in May of 1981 outside the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. by Hinckley, who now is out under some circumstances. And by the way, we will keep you in touch if the state of California does go through with the planned parole of murderer Sirhan Sirhan, an assassin of Robert F. Kennedy. But the idea is that no one looking at that situation that Reagan was in 1981, at the end of that year, he did not have a brilliant first year. It was controversial. It was difficult. He lost seats in the off-year election. And then, boom, in 1984, there was a tremendous landslide. Well, that was largely because the economy had turned around. Is it possible that this economy turns around? And by the way, here's the irony. The economy will particularly turn around, assuming that the Republicans take over the House of Representatives. Because if you have a pro-business House, it will work the same way it did for Clinton. In other words, when President Clinton lost 55 seats in the House in 1994, 55 is a wiped out. He looked like dead man walking. There's even a column that referred to him like that. And Bill Clinton had to say, he did a famous press conference, he said, "Hey, I'm still relevant," because basically they were setting agendas. Newt Gingrich has taken over as Speaker of the House, and the economy started percolating. And guess who got himself reelected? By a pretty comfortable margin, about 8 points against Bob Dole. That would be second-term President Bill Clinton. Now, I don't think that Joe Biden can run, really, for a second term, nor do I think he will, but he says he will. And the idea that anything is locked in stone is a terrible mistake. We're going to be speaking with Scott Rasmussen coming up about what the polling shows. And what this polling shows about the reaction to the budget-busting Build Back Better bill, which is such a crown jewel of the agenda of the Biden administration. That and much more, Ilhan Omar versus Lorraine Boebert. That and more on The Medved Show.
Jingle all the way. Oh, what fun. Get to ride. No one knows the horse or horse, eh? Jingle bells, jingle bells.
On the Michael Medved Show, and of course, singing Jingle Bells, no matter how you sing it, if you sing it in a klezmer version, which we occasionally play on the show, if you sing it this way, it conjures up images. And some of those images have to do with cocoa or coffee in a snowy landscape, and some of the coziness that you get when you blow that steam off, or you're holding a hot beverage of some kind to warm your hands. Well, this will, anybody who loves coffee or any kind of hot refreshment will particularly appreciate this story, which is breaking in a place that gets pretty cold, though most people don't realize it. It's breaking in Jerusalem. It's a piece in the Jerusalem Post. And they point out that as the weather cools down from summer into fall, many people start to drink more hot drinks every day, such as several cups of coffee or tea. The Health and Wellness Portal has released a new study covered by the Jerusalem Post involving hundreds of thousands of participants over 10 years. And it is found that your cup of coffee or tea may be associated with a lower risk of stroke and dementia. And by the way, anybody who's getting on in years, maybe over the age of 60, who isn't at least a little bit concerned with the risks of stroke and dementia is not paying attention. You ought to pay attention. Of the more than 360,000 participants studied over a period of 10 to 14 years, those who drank 2 to 3 cups of coffee a day, or 3 to 5 cups of tea, or a combination of 4 to 6 cups of coffee and or tea a day, had the lowest risk by far of stroke and dementia. This, according to researchers from Tianjin Medical University in China. Now, don't get paranoid and think, aha, it's a Chinese researchers. They're trying to actually get us to drink more coffee and tea because that will poison us. This is an accepted study now because it parallels other studies that have come across that show that overwhelmingly, coffee in particular, I guess they add the tea with deference to the literally billions of people who drink tea. But they say that our findings suggest that moderate consumption of coffee and tea alone or in combination is associated with a much lower risk of stroke and dementia. So say the authors. Drinking coffee or tea alone was also associated with a lower risk of both conditions. But people who drank 2 to 3 cups of coffee and 2 to 3 cups of tea daily, 4 to 6 cups in total, were 28% less likely to develop dementia and 32% less likely to have a stroke compared to those who didn't drink these beverages. This is encouraging. Then several studies have also shown that 3 cups of coffee a day can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Okay, I'm going to have my third cup of coffee in a few moments. According to the British Alzheimer's Association, and this is from another part of the world, coffee containing caffeine, no decaf here, coffee containing caffeine can help the brain in several ways by increasing the production of granulocyte colonies, white blood cells that help protect and repair brain cells connected with the nervous system. Okay, this is all very interesting. And then they also cite Dr. Lee H. Schwamm, who is chairman of the American Stroke Association Advisory Committee and a neurologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, one of the nation's most prestigious hospitals, who reported that researchers can't definitively say that drinking more coffee is good for your brain, yet they can say that in this study, people who reported moderate coffee tea drinking were much less likely to have a stroke or dementia during the 10 years of follow-up. This is worth considering, especially for those of us who actually like coffee. And by the way, this comes out at the time of a very different study that is gaining a bunch of publicity today. We determined we were going to report it today, yesterday. But in the last 24 hours, there have been reports everywhere that it is a terrible idea. That's just a terrible idea to indulge in marijuana as a recreation. Generally, it's a terrible idea, but it's a particularly terrible idea for pregnant women, because the chances are tremendously enhanced, significantly enhanced, that when the baby arrives, he's going to grow up with all kinds of behavioral problems. And for instance, there's actually comments about behavioral problems, about the worst sort of behavioral problem. In fact, it's worse than growing up evil. They could even grow up to be Republicans. You want to see how desperate the Democrats really are at this stage in looking ahead politically? Maxine Waters, one of the senior members of the House of Representatives and one of the most cracked, was speaking on MSNBC, of course, which loves to have Maxine. And here's what she said about her colleagues on the other side of the aisle. This is clip 9.
And we know that they are taking every action they can possibly take to demonize us and speak to that constituency out there. And that apology that you alluded to, they simply know what they're doing when they reach out to their constituency and they fire them all up. So the apology means nothing. The American people are going to be able to distinguish between us and them. And in the final analysis, we're going to win. We're going to beat them. We don't take anything for granted. We know that they're evil. We know that they lie. We know that they don't give a darn about facts. And so we've got to overcome that with the truth.
They're evil? I mean, that's a strong, that's a strong word, Congresswoman.
Oh,
evil.
Oh, worse than that. Worse than that. Evil. When you see the kind of attacks that you have talked about already, that's constantly being made by them, that's evil.
Okay, what's worse than evil? I mean, honestly, this is political rhetoric that is so extreme. When are the issues really that extreme right now? And where is America on those issues? A pollster, Scott Rasmussen, has a good grasp on that. He joins us in moments from now, right here on the Michael Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved.
Wait!
In a moment.
Where are you going?
I was gonna make espresso.
And on the Michael Medved Show, as we look forward to a very fateful, significant election, an off-year election less than a year from today, there is a great deal of confidence on the part of Republicans, a great deal of desperation on the part of Democrats, though some Democrats will tell you, we just heard Maxine Waters talking about her confidence the Democrats are going to win. The reason they're going to win is because that budget-busting Build Back Better bill is going to be so popular. People are going to love it when they figure out what's in the bill, what's in the legislation, assuming that it passes in some form. It's going to sweep them to victory in 2022 and probably 2024. So how does that hypothesis hold up against current polling and recognized public opinion experts? Now, nobody more recognized for his expertise than Scott Rasmussen, and he is committed to enhancing public dialogue through data-driven analysis that explores the underlying currents of public opinion. Scott Rasmussen is the author of the new book, The Sun is Still Rising, Politics Has Failed, But America Will Not. Scott, Merry Christmas to you, and thank you for joining us on the show. It's always a pleasure having you.
Merry Christmas. Great to be here.
Well, thank you, and happy second day of Hanukkah. The popularity of this budget-busting Build Back Better bill, it's thrilling Americans, getting their pulses racing faster and giving them a sunnier outlook and changing public opinion even as we speak.
Well, actually, most Americans don't even know this is going on. You know, part of it is there have been so many trillion-dollar budget-busting bills since the pandemic began. People's eyes are beginning to glaze over. One of the most stunning polls I've done in recent years came the day the president signed the infrastructure bill, and you know it was all over the news. And yet, only 19%, only one out of five voters, could say that yeah, the infrastructure bill passed, and the Build Back Better bill did not. Voters are just tuned out, and I actually think that's good news for the president and for Democrats, because the more people learn about the bill, the more they dislike it.
Yeah, and what? First of all, what are they learning about the bill? I'm sure there's some people listening to us right now who aren't sure, number one, of the status of the bill currently, which still has to get through the Senate, hasn't done that yet. And they also don't know anything about what the bill contains. What is the one thing people think they know about this bill?
The one thing people know is it's going to involve more government spending and taxes. May not know the details, may not know the numbers, and quite frankly, who can tell the difference between, you know, a million and a trillion at this point? What they do know, that higher government spending leads to inflation. The Biden administration is already fighting a huge problem because, you know, inflation is something people deal with in their day-to-day life. You put $20 more into the gas tank, it's $20 you can't spend on something else you need. And, you know, in that scenario, when the Biden administration is saying, okay, now we're going to spend a lot more money and that's going to help out, voters just aren't buying it.
And the other details of the bill is are people generally aware that, at least in its current form, the sweeping new bill would provide universal free preschool for people?
They're not aware of most of the details. You know, when you talk about something about universal free preschool or daycare centers or pre-K, any of these provisions, on the one hand, people think it'd be nice if parents could have access to that. But this legislation put faith-based providers out of the business. It would make severe restrictions on their ability to provide daycare. And on top of that, there's a provision in the bill as it currently stands that to be a daycare provider, to watch those children during the day, you would have to have a college degree. You know, these are absurd provisions that voters are not aware of, and when they learn of them, they object to. But you know,
can we just go over that again? That's in the bill right now as it passed the House.
That's in the bill as it passed the House.
Holy cow! In other words, somebody who is trained, may have years of experience, would lose a job working at a daycare center if that individual did not have a college degree.
And, I mean, think about this. A mother of four, you know, who doesn't have a college degree certainly is qualified to handle a daycare situation in most cases. That's one of the things, again, that's one of the details in this bill. Ultimately, what that does is raise the cost of daycare. And, again, there are subsidies included in this bill, but they would not be available to faith-based providers. So you have that kind of a challenge. But, you know, when you talk about this, it's almost, and I've got to, let's be clear, a bill has passed the House. The Senate, I don't think, is going to act until January. There's just too much they have to get through. When the Senate acts, they will have an entirely different bill, and then the two sides will try to get together, and it remains a question as to whether they can find enough common ground. But right now, as the bill stands, there are provisions that would provide tens of billions of dollars in payments to illegal immigrants. Only 28% of voters support that. there is still a provision in the bill that would let the IRS rummage through your personal bank accounts. You know, and this is ridiculous. People don't think the government needs more access. They think individuals need more privacy protections. There's a tax credit for journalists. Print journalists only, by the way. Radio journalists wouldn't qualify. But a $50,000 tax credit for print journalists, only 19% of voters like that. And I can go through item after item. But these ideas are essentially moving in a direction that most Americans are very uncomfortable with.
Well, I would guess so. And by the way, don't they have to do that debt ceiling increase before January, before they even get to this?
Yes. One of the reasons that I don't think they will get this bill in place this year, get it through the Senate, is because they have to work on the debt ceiling. They also have to work on a continuing resolution. Right now, there is not funding to get the government into January. So there are a lot of procedural hurdles that have to be done. I suspect there will be an all-out effort by Senator Schumer and the Democrats to get something done by Christmas Eve, but I find that timetable really challenging for them. And the longer this goes on, the longer it twists in the wind and the more people learn about it, the less likely it is to pass.
Yeah, and the worse idea it is for the Democrats to pin all their hopes on this one FDR-like gigantic effort to remake the government and the whole pattern of federal spending. Scott Rasmussen, we appreciate your perspective always and your fountain of information and basically indicating what we are facing with the American public right now. His latest book continues that story. The book is called The Sun is Still Rising. Politics has failed, but America will not. That, of course, alludes to the famous question Benjamin Franklin received about the meaning of an insignia that was on a chair at the Constitutional Convention in 1787, where it wasn't very well drawn and they couldn't figure out whether it was a rising sun or a setting sun. No time for sunset now. Scott Rasmussen, wonderful wishes for a terrific holiday. When we come back, is the pandemic? Are vaccines and masks and other responses to the vaccine, the pandemic going to be a major issue in this coming election? We'll talk about that and more coming up on the MedVet Show.
Your outlet for outrage.
Where's the outrage? I'm shook up, and you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be driving down the road listening to all this. I'm going to wreck the car and sue Michael MedVet.
Okay, don't sue and don't wreck the car.
The Michael MedVet Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by choir.
And on the Michael MedVet Show, hoping that you were enjoying all of the beautiful things about this season, and that it's not going to be spoiled by the school shooting just reported today. A 15-year-old gunman opened fire at his Michigan high school this morning. It was apparently at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so 10 a.m. Pacific time. He killed at least 3 people and wounded 6 others, authorities said. The shooter is a sophomore. Do you remember what you were like as a sophomore, high school sophomore? He's a sophomore at Oxford High School, about 40 miles north of Detroit. It means he's probably 15. It's in Oakland County under Sheriff Mike McCabe, said in a brief news conference this afternoon. Officers took the suspect into custody around 1 p.m., a few minutes after the first 911 calls came in. They recovered a handgun, and they don't yet know what motivated the attack. Police have not identified the victims, but Under Sheriff McCabe said that the three fatalities are believed to be students, and one teacher is among the wounded. If this is a 15-year-old kid, and we will bring you the news as it comes forward. I mean, one of the things that we should be able to make sure does not happen in this society is for 15-year-olds in the city don't get hold of guns. If your dad is taking out hunting or something like that, or you go out shooting with a parent or an adult legally entitled friend, I mean, this is unbelievable. And there are murder rates going up everywhere. But of course, the school shootings are particularly impactful because it's so cruel and it's so unfair and it's so outrageous. You need to believe when you send your little kids, and even when they get to be big kids, out of the home, and you expect them to be safe in a school-wide setting. This is what you pay taxes for. This is what we all sacrifice big time for. We're going to be talking later about the big school systems in this country are now paying more than $20,000 per year per child. Now, think of the percentage that means of a typical income. I mean, especially if you have a bunch of kids. My son now is blessed with three wonderful children. Little David, the youngest of them, is too young for school, but the others are going to preschool. And my gosh. And Christmas season. And this is just an area where we talk about it all the time, but there ought to be some leadership. This would be an appropriate issue for Republicans and Democrats to come together, wouldn't it? Because this idea of trying to reduce school shooting by making it much more difficult for children to get hold of weapons, that is not, should not be a controversial matter, should it? I mean, we know lots of very enthusiastic gun owners. But the idea that their children, particularly young children, particularly a 15-year-old, sometimes kids younger than that, it's just wrong, and it's depressing, and it's horrifying, in fact. And as to Maxine Waters, who just said that Republicans are worse than evil, an occasion like this with a teacher who's wounded and could be gravely wounded, and with three children dead at this stage in their life, my gosh, we can do better. We must do better. Really. The ongoing discussion about the election and the decision and the direction of the country. Of course, you can see when there's a story like this that just intrudes on our conversation, it intrudes on everything, it intrudes in our brains, in our imaginations, in the way we look at the world around us, the way we look at the holiday season. With all of this going around, it indicates how futile it is to really predict what Americans are going to be thinking about 11 months from now. in November of 2022, let alone November of 2024. But no one, I think, would have predicted during the election cycle of 2020 that the 2022 election cycle, 2 years later, would still be arguing profoundly about different approaches to the pandemic, to the COVID-19 variant, and now the Omicron variant. The entire issue is very tough to shake. And Gerald Seib, writing in the Wall Street Journal, says that he believes that the new world of pandemic politics may have transformed politics generally. He writes, debates over mask requirements, vaccination mandates, economic shutdowns, and school closings have raised philosophical questions over both the proper role of government in setting rules for society and where those rules are best set. In some cases, disagreements on these issues have even turned violent. In perhaps the broadest impact, he writes, the crisis has widened the gap between Americans who think that the federal role in the scramble for vaccine development and economic rescues underscores just how essential government is in addressing big problems like this one. That would be generally the Democratic view. And then there are those who think that governmental institutions have proven to be incompetent and overly intrusive. That would be more of the Republican environment, the Republican approach, the Republican mood regarding these issues. What's fascinating to me, and I was thinking about it, was the Republican Party has a heritage that is deeply steeped, one could almost say marinated, in the temperance movement. The long, 100-year-long drive here in the United States to get alcohol outlawed. There are very, very few Democrats. Democrats were the party overwhelmingly of immigrants and working people and saloons and people who were very open to the pleasures of drinking. Republicans, though they were never absolutists like the Prohibition Party, Republicans and newly franchised women's voters were the party that was much more committed to limiting alcohol consumption. So this idea that there is a traditional Republican notion that it's my body, I control it, the government should have no business with that, well, ask Lincoln. Lincoln, long before he became president, was active. One of his famous speeches was to a temperance society, an anti-drinking society, in Illinois, in Jacksonville, Illinois. This is worth talking about because I think both parties trying to go back to their heritage and back to first principles are going to have to come up with something better to try to make some progress for the sake not just of a party but of this greatest nation on God's green earth.